Arkansans will go to the polls to elect a new governor this week. I'm Kay McIntyre, and today on KPR Presents, we look at the big three contenders for Kansas governor: Republican Kris Kobach, Democrat Laura Kelly, and Independent Greg Orman. It's My Fellow Kansans, a production of the Kansas News Service, today on KPR Presents.
Support for My Fellow Kansans and the following message comes from the Kansas Leadership Center, offering leadership development training in Wichita, Kansas City, and online. Use promo code MFK for a registration discount. Leadership for the common good. KansasLeadershipCenter.org.
Thank you very much.
Greg Orman's concession speech in 2014, when he lost a race that many thought he might win, didn't sound much like a concession speech.
Hey, while Senator Roberts won tonight, we didn't lose. We not only ran against Senator Roberts, we ran against the whole Washington establishment. I believe that what we did sparked a fuse that will allow other independents in other states to step forward and say, enough with the partisanship, enough with the fighting, enough with the gridlock. We need to go there and represent Americans, not one party or the other.
Well, it's 2018, and Independent Greg Orman is not in Washington. He's in Kansas, running for governor. I'm Jim McLean, and this is My Fellow Kansans, a podcast from the Kansas News Service. In the first four episodes, we mapped Kansas's political DNA, recounted the Summer of Mercy abortion protests, documented the rise and fall of Sam Brownback and the splintering of the Kansas Republican Party, all the history that delivered us to this political moment. But starting with this episode, we're going to mix it up. We'll dive into the current campaign and get to know this year's candidates for governor.
I was raised in a military family, so I was moving constantly.
Yeah, I actually had a TV program for 7 years called Grace United, the Rick and Penny Show.
I am running to be the lead representative of the average Kansan.
I was a consummate debate geek.
We'll get their backstories. We'll hear about their visions for Kansas. And of course, I'll press them on the issues of the day. We'll start with Greg Orman.
And I said to my dad, you know, I might want to be a politician someday. And without missing a beat, he said, you know, why don't you skip the internship and go straight into crime?
So the polls show him in single digits, well behind Republican Kris Kobach and Democrat Laura Kelly, who are virtually tied. Orman is the wild card in the race, the X factor, a potential spoiler who probably can't win, but who could still determine the outcome. Who says? Well, virtually everyone who watches politics for a living, or I hesitate to say it, for fun, from political scientists to former Republican Governor Bill Graves.
I don't see the scenario where an independent is going to be elected governor of the state.
And former Democratic Governor Kathleen Sebelius, one of many nervous Laura Kelly supporters.
So one of the things a Democrat is going to have to do is not only run against the Republican, but make sure that people know voting for Greg Orman is throwing away your vote. It is Jill Stein in the presidential race.
Or Ralph Nader.
We've seen these quixotic candidates before who believe they and only they can save the world. Greg Orman could elect Kris Kobach governor. He cannot elect himself governor.
But, and this should come as no surprise, Orman doesn't see it that way. At least he didn't at the start of the campaign. He got into the race believing that the conventional wisdom about independent candidates was wrong, particularly at this moment in our political history.
I sort of think conventional wisdom needs to be thrown out of the window. And I mean, if you look at the recent Gallup polling, 49% of Republicans and 52% of Democrats think we need a third party. Now, think about the implications of that. These are people who are members of the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, so dislike their own party that they think we need an alternative.
But you also have a very high percentage of Republicans who support President Trump, who's not really a traditional Republican. That suggests there's some level of party loyalty, regardless of other exigencies.
Actually, I think what we're seeing in partisanship today is not necessarily loyalty to our own party so much as it is a hatred of the other party. And I think that's what our candidacy is about. We're trying to appeal to a broad cross-section of Kansans, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. We want to give them an inspiring message and a vision for the future so that they can actually vote for a candidate they like instead of voting against a candidate that they hate and they fear. And I think that's what partisanship is giving people today.
And Orban isn't the only one arguing that the current system is broken. Rick Clues is also running as an independent. He calls himself a frustrated Republican, frustrated enough to have, with his wife and son, gathered the thousands of signatures necessary to get on the ballot.
I'm here today as just, you know, your outsider guy. I've got a lot of money. I don't know a lot of people, but I got a heart for Kansas, and that's why I'm running for governor.
Jeff Caldwell is also on the ballot as the nominee of the Libertarian Party.
I am the only candidate that brings four prongs to the table: cut spending, cut taxes, legalize cannabis, and defend the Second Amendment.
Both Caldwell and Clues will get some votes, but neither has a prayer of winning. That's why they were excluded from most of the candidate debates. But Orman was on stage every time. His resources and his credible run for the Senate 4 years ago made him a legitimate contender in the minds of many. So at the first really big debate of the campaign, there he was, flanked by Kobach and Kelly.
On stage here at the Kansas State Fair. So here to have our first opening statement will come from the independent candidate, Greg Orman.
Good morning. William Allen White, the famed Emporia Gazette editor, once said, "When anything's going to happen in America, it happens first in Kansas." Kansas used to be a leader, a place that other states looked to for inspiration. Now we're a cautionary tale. We need to shake up Topeka and bring new leadership and new ideas if we want to create a state where our children and grandchildren are inspired to build their lives. This means throwing out failed partisan playbooks and embracing new ideas. I've spent my life in the private sector, creating jobs and opportunities and building businesses. I know how to grow the Kansas economy, how to create good-paying jobs and broaden our tax base without raising taxes, so we can invest in our future, so that every Kansas child has the chance to live their own version of the American dream. Thank you.
So, why does a guy who built several successful businesses that made a lot of money run for governor? And do it the hard way as an independent with no party infrastructure behind him. Well, between his 2014 Senate run and his campaign for governor, Orman wrote a book, A Declaration of Independence, explaining his ideology and motivation. Reading a little bit in your book, I can't say that I finished it, but I will.
There is a test at the end, so...
I have delved into it a bit and read that your father was, generally speaking, disdainful of politicians. What was his phrase?
Well, you know, I had participated in the Boys Nation program. Right. I came home so excited after meeting Ronald Reagan in the Rose Garden, and I said to my dad, you know, I might want to be a politician someday. And without missing a beat, he said, you know, why don't you skip the internship and go straight into crime? so he obviously, as a small business owner, he was somewhat disdainful, but he had a real message there. You know, what my dad really said to me was, look, if you run for public office someday, you should first go out and accomplish something with your life. Be in a position where you have some real experience to contribute and hopefully put yourself in a position financially that losing an election won't upend your life. His concern was, you know, politicians who, for whom it's the best job they're ever going to have, they're going to do anything to keep that job, even if it means violating the trust with their constituents. And, you know, my father was really big on making sure that, you know, I knew that the two things most important in this life were health and integrity.
What did your father do for a living?
My father still owns and runs a furniture store in Stanley, Kansas.
Your mother, though, mm-hmm. was fairly active politically, at least a member of the Minnesota Democratic Party, the Farm Labor Party, right up there in Minnesota.
Well, you know, my mother came by that, honestly. My mother's father was Hubert Humphrey's top person for 25 years. In fact, he held the Bible when Hubert Humphrey was inaugurated Vice President of the United States. She was a member of the Nurses Union and very much a Democrat.
How do you blend those two things together? Is there a nexus point there between your mother's political experience and her beliefs and your father's?
Well, you know, maybe I became an independent as a way of self-preservation, but I love and respect both my parents. And, you know, I think it makes me more able to really understand
the positions from both sides of the aisle. And I think that's part of what's missing in politics today. There seems to be such a trust gap between Republicans and Democrats. It reminds me, and I've said this before, of a married couple going through a bitter divorce. You know, they don't talk to each other anymore. When they do, they mistrust each other's intentions. And putting that group of people together and saying, solve our problems, is a little bit like taking that married couple and putting them in a room and saying, figure it out on your own. It's really not going to happen without the intervention of a third force, a force that's willing to listen to both sides, maybe do a little bit of mediation, in some cases maybe suggest solutions that neither side has thought of. But ultimately, I really do believe we need that third force in our politics.
Orman has run a serious campaign. He's put out a series of glossy issue papers that lay out plans for funding public education, growing the Kansas economy, and increasing government transparency. If elected, he says he'd hold regular town hall meetings and schedule weekly meetings with lawmakers, regardless of their party affiliation.
I want to make it clear that we want to return Kansas government to people. We want to make sure that they have an opportunity to participate in helping define the vision for where we want to have Kansas go. And I want them to feel like the governor's office is open and accessible to them.
You want to prohibit people who either are serving in elective office or in a position in your cabinet or anybody else's for that matter, from then becoming a lobbyist for 3 years after they leave that job. Why is that important?
You know, it was something that I called for in 2014 in my Senate race. I really believe that, you know, public service should be about public service. It shouldn't be a stepping stone to a lucrative career lobbying your former colleagues or members of the administration on behalf of special interests. And so I just think creating that gap in time between your public service and when you can come back and act in the capacity of a lobbyist really is prudent and helps ensure that the government of Kansas is working for the people of Kansas.
Based on his positions, it's clear that Orman is a moderate. Some might even call him a liberal. Medicaid expansion is kind of a dividing line issue, and Orman's for it, for extending CanCare coverage to another 150,000 Kansans, poor but able-bodied adults who now don't qualify for it.
We send our working poor in Kansas a terrible message. What we tell them is, if you get sick and you need health care, quit your job. And I don't think that's the kind of message that we want to send to them. You know, there's a donut hole between 38% of the poverty line and 138% of the poverty line. People aren't getting care in this state because they can't afford it. We need to drive down the cost of health care, and then we need to expand Medicaid so that we can not only provide services to those people, but underpin the critical access hospitals we have in the state that are so vital to rural Kansas.
Like all candidates wanting to remain viable in Kansas politics, Orman says he's all for the Second Amendment. But he also says the state went too far in easing restrictions on where people can and can't carry concealed weapons. And he's against arming teachers.
You know, again, I'm a gun owner and support the Second Amendment, but I don't think we make our kids safer by arming teachers. My wife is a teacher, and the idea that we would arm teachers as a way to make them safer, I don't think is the right answer.
It took Orman a while to firm up his position on the ultimate dividing line issue of abortion. He stumbled a bit when asked about it during an interview with MSNBC's Chuck Todd early in the year.
Culture issues are going to be front and center with your opponents on abortion. What's your position?
Well, you know, I sort of
think, should be legal.
Yes, it should be legal. But again, I'm not. I understand the points of view of people who are in the pro-life community. My mother is very pro-life.
I pressed him on the issue when we talked in August, just as the battle over Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's confirmation was beginning to heat up, and raising the possibility that Roe versus Wade could be overturned. But should you become governor, depending on what happens at the federal level, you may very well be dealing with a legislature that passes a bill to make abortion illegal in Kansas again if the Supreme Court allows states to do that again. Should that happen, what would you do?
I don't want to go back to a time when women had these procedures done in unsafe and unsanitary environments. So that wouldn't be something that I'd be supportive of. I think we've seen all sorts of evidence that suggests for places that have incredibly restrictive laws in that regard, that ultimately that's what ends up happening. And I think that's bad for women. I think that's bad for Kansas.
Orman is a polished candidate. In debates and forums, he holds his own. But he may have misread the political tea leaves. It's not 2014 anymore. That year, the Democrat dropped out of the Senate race, and the scenario captivated the national media, from the New York Times to PBS to CNN.
Suddenly, we're also watching Kansas. Pat Roberts survived a Tea Party challenge. Everybody thought at that point, okay, it's Kansas, it's a pro-Republican year, he's going to win. But the Democratic candidate dropped out of the race yesterday. Now Greg Orman, the independent candidate, has a one-on-one shot at Pat Roberts, who has, let's just say, not run a stellar campaign. I'm going to be extra kind this morning.
Democrats were rooting for Orman then. Now some are hoping he'll drop out of the governor's race. Donald Trump's election as president in 2016 and all of the stuff that followed, well, it's deepened the already cavernous divisions in America, made voters more partisan, more committed to their tribes. There just aren't that many truly independent voters in play, says Beth Von Ami. She's the chair of the Political Science Department at the University of Missouri-Kansas City, and she studies the psychology of voters.
We generally talk about there being three types of independents. So there's your weak partisans who, when you ask them, they say independent, but when you press them a little bit, they say, well, I really only vote Republican, I really only vote Democrat. That's a huge portion of people who actually identify as independent initially. Then there's your apolitical folks, people who are independent because they don't actually know anything about politics, care anything about politics. And then you have your true independents. And the reality is that's maybe 10 to 15% of independents are really true independents. And these are people who can't decide between the Democrats and Republicans. They see either of them as exactly the same, or they see the process of politics as so fundamentally corrupt and partisan, sort of a Greg Orman approach, that they can't abide with either of the two parties. Those are the independents we typically think about, but they're certainly not the majority.
By now, Orman may understand that he has no clear path to victory, but he says he's going to continue campaigning right through Election Day. That's a concern for Democrat Laura Kelly, but it's good news for Republican Chris Kobach, the debate nerd turned full-throttle conservative.
He's the ACLU's worst nightmare, because he knows the Constitution and fights to keep them from making confetti of it. He's Chris Kobach, and this is The Chris Kobach Show.
His story on My Fellow Kansans.
You're listening to My Fellow Kansans on Kansas Public Radio. My Fellow Kansans is a production of the Kansas News Service, a collaboration of public radio stations across the state.
Head down the Kansas Turnpike this campaign season, and you're bound to see a sign tucked just inside the fence line of a field or pasture, a large red, white, and blue sign that says, Chris Kobach, consistent conservative. The Republican nominee for governor has earned that self-assigned label by, among other things, taking a hard-line stand on hot-button issues like abortion, taxes, and an issue that he has a particular affinity for, immigration.
We have to get serious about enforcing the law against those who come in illegally. It's absolutely critical that we return the rule of law to immigration. I testified before
that could be audio from this year's campaign, but it isn't. It's from a debate back in 2004 when Kobach was running for Congress. He lost that election, but he didn't go away. He became Secretary of State in 2010. And now Kobach's one of the favorites in a governor's race that appears headed for a photo finish. I'm Jim McLean, and this is My Fellow Kansans, a podcast from the Kansas News Service. On this episode, we'll turn the spotlight on Chris Kobach, the full-throttle conservative, another self-assigned characterization, whose goal is to keep Kansas among the reddest of the nation's red states.
If I'm your governor of Kansas, you'll have conservative results. Number one, we will cut taxes. Number two, we will end illegal immigration in Kansas. Number three, we will protect unborn life in Kansas. We will end the culture of corruption in Topeka, and we will be the number one state in protecting gun rights in America.
He admires the president.
America has changed forever, and we can now say on the Chris Kobach Show, President Trump. Doesn't that sound good? President Trump. Oh, I know some liberals listening are just, it's getting under their skin already.
Like Trump, Kobach delights in confronting his political opponents, sometimes going out of his way to rile them up. His penchant for riding in parades in a Jeep mounted with a replica machine gun is just one example.
I think Kansas needs a conservative fighter in the office who won't back down when liberals in the media or snowflakes on a parade route start attacking conservatives for doing what we do, which is stand by American traditional values. We need a governor. When the lefties attack, he hits right back. And so I didn't back down when they complained about that Jeep. I doubled down. And now we're taking that Jeep to every parade we can.
Kobach's confrontational style was also front and center at the Kansas State Fair debate. It's always a raucous event because each candidate has his or her own cheering section. But Kobach added to the bedlam by taking on the crowd in addition to his opponents. He got into it with the crowd when responding to a question about whether to legalize medical marijuana.
California legalized medical marijuana first, and it just became a gateway for recreational marijuana. We do not need to legalize marijuana, and we will not legalize marijuana on my administration. Go eat some Doritos. Come on.
Yes, you heard that right. Kobach told the heckling crowd to, quote, go eat some Doritos.
Hey, I enjoy a good debate. I enjoyed debating in high school, debating in college. You know, part of the fun of debating is having a witty retort, and I enjoy it.
Are you demonizing the other side, or you just have?
No, they were. Remember what was happening at the state fairs. At one point, the cheering section for the Democrats was so agitated about things I'd been saying.
Things he had been saying about medical marijuana and about school spending, namely that lavish spending on buildings and administration are cutting into classroom resources and shortchanging students.
You probably have a recording of it.
We do.
I said, let's do a quick math problem.
Let's imagine you have a classroom of 25 students, and we spend $14,000 per student. That's 33. I know you don't like math, but just listen.
And they started booing.
That's $350,000. Now the teacher's salary and the computers, oh, they really don't like math. They don't like logic either. How about rational thought?
And then there was a little bit of a back and forth with the audience. No, I think debating's fun. I do enjoy intellectual combat, so to speak. I think it's fun.
So much is being made of our tribal politics in this country these days, and how mean and bitter and partisan it's gotten. And certainly no one would accuse you of shrinking you from your position. You're bloody aggressive, but you don't seem to do it with the kind of malice that you see.
Exactly. See, you can be an aggressive defender of your position without being mean, without using ad hominem attacks against the other person. I think that was one of the wonderful things about high school debate in Kansas for me, and in a broader sense, wonderful things about the way politics used to be, when you could have a robust disagreement and then come together afterwards, shake hands, and go have dinner together. You know, I think that's important. We need to treat each other with respect. We need to be friendly as we disagree. And that's just the way I am. I would never attack someone personally or try to assassinate an opponent's character. It's just wrong. I mean, we should treat people with respect.
But there are plenty of people who say that Kobach's habit of referring to political rivals as lefties, libs, and snowflakes is in fact malicious. And he's been dogged by charges about racist overtones in his claims about immigration and voter fraud, claims he's used to propel his political career.
Why are Kansans turning from Kris Kobach? Look who's supporting him. People and groups tied to white supremacists gave Kobach thousands. One even hired Kobach. It's true. An extremist group hired Kobach to file a frivolous lawsuit against the state of Kansas.
That ad from the 2004 congressional campaign touched off a testy exchange in a debate between Kobach and his opponent in that race, Democratic Congressman Dennis Moore.
With his character assassination attempt, he not only hurts my reputation, he hurts my family, and this is something that the 3rd District voters do not deserve, the cheap politics of personal destruction. Second, the so-called frivolous lawsuit that I brought was to block implementation of Kansas Bill 2145, which gives in-state tuition to illegal aliens. That was a direct violation of a 1996 act of Congress. You may not have known about it because you weren't in Congress yet, but that act forbids a state from giving in-state tuition to illegal aliens unless the state gives in-state tuition to all U.S. citizens.
Your chance to respond, Congressman Moore.
I want to read you what the Kansas City Star said on October 14. Kobach has received support from several groups like Team America, which says on its website that if the United States opens its borders, quote, our island of productivity and prosperity will soon disappear beneath a flood of third world squalor. And Mr. Kobach signed, got $1,000 from that group, and signed a pledge that says this, I will support a timeout on immigration until serious reforms can be enacted. There are people in this country who would have you believe that every immigrant is a terrorist. It's just not the case. Just not the case, Mr. Kobach.
Kobach remains opposed to granting in-state tuition to undocumented students who graduate from Kansas high schools, even though repealing the rule would cost state universities more than it would save.
$4 million this year alone. I'll end in-state tuition for illegal aliens, and we'll use that money to help Kansas students.
Kobach certainly is consistent in his conservatism. He's repeated his arguments so often over so many years, it's like they're his mantras. He says non-citizens are taking our jobs, stealing our resources, and infiltrating our elections. He's persuaded small towns far from Topeka, Fremont, Nebraska, Valley Park, Missouri, and Hazleton, Pennsylvania, to hire him to defend anti-immigration ordinances. He drafted a law for Arizona that makes it a crime to be in that state without papers, and consulted with Joe Arpaio, the controversial former sheriff, on how to enforce it.
I'd like to start by recognizing our distinguished vice chair, the Kansas Secretary of State, Chris Kobach. Mr. Secretary, you...
In 2017, Kobach was an obvious choice to help lead President Trump's Commission on Voter Fraud.
For your opening remarks.
It's indeed a great honor to serve as vice chairman of this commission. The charge of the commission is a significant one, as the president outlined, to study the threats to the integrity of our elections, to quantify those threats if possible, and if it's the will of the commission, to offer recommendations to the president to help ensure the integrity of future elections in this country.
Well, that commission was dismantled before producing any findings or recommendations. And then, just as Kobach was getting his campaign for governor off the ground, the ACLU hauled him into federal court. The lawsuit challenged the law that Kobach said was needed to stop what he and few others insist is rampant voter fraud in Kansas, a law that required voters to show proof of citizenship to register.
Secretary of State Chris Kobach got a tongue-lashing today from the judge who'll decide whether he can block voters who lack documentation such as passports proving their citizenship. Remember station KCUR, Celia Yopiece Jepson has more.
Judge Julie Robinson accused Secretary Kobach of gamesmanship. In the nearly 2 years since she ordered him to register tens of thousands of voters who signed up through the DMV, Robinson said she's had to repeatedly monitor his actions to try to get him to comply.
It proved to be an embarrassing few weeks for Kobach. He failed to produce evidence that a substantial number of non-citizens are on the voter rolls and voting, and the judge frequently chastised him and his legal team for making rookie mistakes. Then there was the outcome.
A federal judge has struck down a Kansas law that required proof of U.S. citizenship in order to register to vote. The ruling is a blow to the Secretary of State.
Not only did Kobach, and by extension the state, lose the case, the judge held him in contempt for not following earlier court orders. But like President Trump so often does, Kobach went on the offensive, turning what could have been a body blow into a political advantage.
Now the ACLU is attacking me and our laws, seeking to weaken our election security. But I won't back down.
Lorraine Maniti researches voter fraud at Rutgers University, and she was an expert witness for the ACLU at the trial.
I've been researching it since 2001.
Over that time, she's found that actual voter fraud, particularly non-citizens voting, is rare. But allegations continued to gain currency, leaving Maniti to ask why.
Why, if it's not happening, do people think it's happening? And what's that relationship between allegations and the actual evidence? And I offer my own political analysis, which is that the allegations themselves are a political strategy. And the strategy is to scare people, to make them think that elections are not fair, they're not safe, that fraud is determining the outcome. And therefore, that justifies new rules like voter ID laws.
And it gives politicians like Chris Kobach, who are fighting for those laws, a potent wedge issue. All of it, the voter fraud crusade, the tough talk on immigration, his promise to cut taxes and protect gun rights, all of it has created a sort of kinship between Kobach and President Trump.
Everybody get out and vote for my friend Chris Kobach on Election Day, please.
Kobach says that Trump's endorsement of the Twitter in the primary may have keyed his extremely narrow win over Governor Jeff Collier. The president's subsequent trip to Kansas to deliver his endorsement in person could also be a factor in what is shaping up to be a very close general election.
Well, a new poll shows Democrat Laura Kelly and Republican Chris Kobach in essentially a dead heat for the race for governor. That's according
polls showing Kobach and Laura Kelly tied at about 40% have also indicated that the Democrat would have about a 4-point lead if independent Greg Orman wasn't in the race. Not surprisingly, a big part of Kelly's strategy has been to convince swing voters, mainly moderate Republicans, that a vote for Orman is really a vote for Kobach, and convince them that she's more in step with average Kansans than her combative and polarizing rival.
Most of them are very common sense, they're pragmatic, and they just want good stewardship, good leadership, and they're really not looking for the extremes. I think there's a lot of motivation right now, and we're going to see a lot of moderates coming out to vote in this election and voting for me because they want to get back to that common sense, salt of the earth approach to politics.
Kelly likes to say Kobach is Sam Brownback on steroids, an even more extreme version of the former Republican governor whose drastic income tax cuts sent the state reeling. But Kobach says he's the salt of the earth candidate, the one who's focused on improving the lives of everyday Kansans. And he says he's a different kind of conservative than Brownback, who he considers part of the Republican establishment.
I believe in a more principled conservatism, and it might be a little bit more populist in nature, in the sense that if you are concerned about protecting American workers against illegal competition, that's a populist point of view. That the Country Club Republican does not like that, because the Country Club Republican wants his yard trimmed by cheap labor and wants his factory staffed by cheap labor. So it's more of a populist conservatism. I think another area where I've disagreed with the Brownback-Collier administration has been on working for people in the labor community, for example, on work comp. I've been working very hard to improve our work comp system, which is unconstitutional right now, according to the Kansas Court of Appeals. And I've pressed for legislation to fix this unconstitutional problem where some injured workers get absolutely no recovery whatsoever for their permanent impairment. So I think a populist conservative brand might be the right point there, where you have a conservative who fights for the working man and woman. That might be the right label, but again, it depends on how you use the terms.
That gets us back to the conversation we had with author Thomas Frank in our first episode. He's the Kansas native who wrote the book What's the Matter with Kansas in the early 2000s, a book in which he described how, in his view, conservatives had appropriated populism from progressives and twisted it to serve their own political ends.
I mean, it's a kind of cultural formula where you speak to people's class-based grievances. And that's an important part of it, that it is class-based grievances. It is the average people, you know, blue-collar working people, the producer class, versus this kind of parasite elite. And that is extremely powerful stuff. Now, it also happens to be, as I've said so many times, an illusion and self-damaging. And the conservatives have figured out a way to harness that anger without really doing anything about the economic basis of the grievance, about what's happened, what's actually happened. I mean, they make that much worse. That gets worse all the time.
I don't agree with Frank.
Now, Kobach isn't sure, but he thinks that he and Frank may have once mixed it up on the Kansas high school debate circuit, and he's ready to take him on again.
You know, his thesis, as I understand it, is that people are voting against their economic interests. You know, that's a sort of a bizarre statement to make. The best measure of a person's economic interest is done by the person himself. Pointy-headed intellectual can sit in a chair somewhere and say, no, that's not your true interest. You don't know what's good for you. I think that's ridiculous. Economically speaking, you would always say that the buyer, the person in the marketplace, in this case, the marketplace of politics and voting, would know which person, which candidate serves his interests. It's a classic elite conceit that the analyst, the author from outside, can look at what those people really should be doing and tell them what their true interest is.
And so, bottom line, you're a moderate Republican or independent voter in Kansas, not part of your famous Kobach base. What is your message to voters like that who think somehow they have something to fear from you as governor?
Look at my record. The things that I have accomplished, I promised beforehand and I got them done. And I think the vast majority of voters who are in the middle would agree with them. Things like photo ID and proof of citizenship for people registering to vote. Those issues poll very well with Kansans. We're talking 75, 80%. 85% support. If you look at what I'm talking about doing as governor, we're talking about things that the vast majority of Kansans agree with. For example, cutting our very high sales taxes. We have the eighth high sales taxes in America. Sales taxes are regressive. They have a greater impact on the poor than they do on the wealthy. And the vast majority of Kansans see that and agree that our sales taxes are too high. Having recorded committee votes so you know how your legislator votes. Lots of Democrats agree with me on that one, as well as people in the middle. Illegal immigration, stopping giving welfare benefits to illegal aliens. So, you know, I think if people look at the specifics, they will say, yeah, actually, these are decent ideas. I agree with Kobach there. And at least I know with Kobach, he's not some mealy-mouthed politician who says one thing one day and says the opposite the next day and tries to make everybody happy.
Will Kobach's brand of populist conservatism win the day? Or will Kelly's argument that Kansas needs a steady consensus builder after eight tumultuous years prevail?
Chris Kobach would be just like Sam Brownback. Lots of fighting, only making things worse.
The case for and against Laura Kelly on My Fellow Kansans.
My Fellow Kansans is a production of the Kansas News Service, a collaboration of public radio stations across the state. The podcast is written and reported by Jim McLean, edited by Amy Jeffries, and mixed by Matthew Long Middleton. The production team includes Beth Golay, Nadia Foe, Scott Cannon, and me, Grace Lotz. Primary color music composed our theme. Reporter Celia Yopis Jepsen contributed to this episode. This credit is her reward for weeks spent in court covering the trial over Kansas's voter registration laws for KCUR and NPR. Thanks to KCPT for producing that third district congressional debate in 2004. And special thanks to Neil Carruth of NPR and the NPR training team. If you liked this episode, leave us a review on iTunes. It helps other people find our podcast. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at KS News Service.
You're listening to My Fellow Kansans on Kansas Public Radio. So far this hour, we've looked at the campaigns of Republican Chris Kobach and Independent Greg Orman. Coming up, Democrat Laura Kelly. That's just ahead as KPR Presents continues right after this. You're listening to KPR Presents on Kansas Public Radio. We're 91.5 Lawrence and 89.7 Emporia. Find out who will serve as the next governor of Kansas with KPR's live Election Day coverage. Kansas Public Radio News Director Jay Schaefer and Jim McLean from the Kansas News Service will co-anchor our coverage and bring you the latest results from around the state. Join us for live election coverage from NPR and KPR this Tuesday night beginning at 7 o'clock on Kansas Public Radio.
Support for KPR comes from the Eldridge Hotel, located at 701 Massachusetts Street in Lawrence. Now with a newly renovated lobby and restaurants, including the Jayhawker, the All-American Bar, and the new Eldridge House Grill, all featuring new menus. More information at eldridgehotel.com.
Support for My Fellow Kansans and the following message comes from the Kansas Leadership Center, offering leadership development training in Wichita, Kansas City, and online. Use promo code MFK for a registration discount. Leadership for the common good. KansasLeadershipCenter.org.
Let's just say Democrat Laura Kelly didn't get off to a stellar start at one of the first big events in her campaign for governor.
Anyway, I'm Laura Kelly. I'm a state senator. I'm also a wife, a mother, and the proud daughter born into a military family.
At a Democratic debate last spring, she stumbled through her explanation of the very reason she's running, to fix the damage she says was done by former Governor Sam Brownback's tax cuts, damage to the public schools and communities that drew her to Kansas.
Those things are at risk because of the rigid ideology of Sam Brownback and Jeff Collier. They have mortgaged our futures, and they've done that to give breaks to those who least needed them. They've treated Kansans like guinea pigs, and their failed experiment has resulted in larger classes, crumbling highways, and I'm forgetting, in a stagnant economy.
Kansas City Star columnist Melinda Hennenberger wrote that Kelly's performance alarmed some Democrats, made them worry whether she was ready to take on Secretary of State Kris Kobach, the firebrand conservative with a big personality, who Republicans picked as their nominee for governor. Kelly heard the whispers and appeared determined to silence them with her opening statement on a very hot mic at the Kansas State Fair.
This past 8 years, we have gone through a world of hurt. So now we have a very important choice. Do we end the experiment once and for all? Or do we hand the wheel to a man who has promised to drive us right back into the ditch?
Writing about that debate in a column headlined, "Is That You, Laura Kelly?" Hennenberger noted that Kelly's newfound energy and crisp, combative, and loud performance had fired up Democrats in the crowd. I'm Jim McLean, and this is My Fellow Kansans from the Kansas News Service. It took a while, but Laura Kelly found her footing. And now she's battling Kris Kobach down to the wire in a governor's race that will determine whether Kansas continues its sharp right turn or pivots back to its traditional center.
We share a joint responsibility to give our citizens quality services rendered effectively, efficiently, and economically.
A tradition embodied by a long line of moderate Republicans and some middle-of-the-road Democrats like former Governor Bob Docking. On this episode, we get acquainted with Laura Kelly, a Democrat in the Docking mold.
When I got into the Senate, at most I've had 9 other Senate Democrat colleagues.
She's the top Democrat on the state Senate's budget writing and health committees. She has a tendency to get into the weeds on policy, and she sees herself as a consensus builder.
We need 21 votes to pass anything, so you know, it was clear I needed to go across the aisle.
Laura Kelly is at home in the State House, where we met up to talk, if not yet in the governor's mansion.
Would it be fair to say that you were a bit of a reluctant candidate, at least at first?
Yeah, I mean, I've been asked to run for governor a few times. This time around, I really felt that the state's been through so many trials and tribulations over the past 8 years that I just could not sit back and stay out of the race. That I really felt that I had sort of the portfolio, the experience, and the relationships to win.
Speaking of relationships, it's pretty well known that you and former Governor Kathleen Sebelius are pretty good friends. What role did she play in convincing you to go ahead and jump in?
You know, I did have conversations with Governor Sebelius, absolutely no doubt about that, as I did with a number of other people in deciding whether or not to get into this race.
Take me back to that decision-making process just a little bit. I think you told me a story once we were just chatting during the legislative session, and you were ruminating on this, and you would take long walks up on the trails by Cedar Crest and just think about this. Was that part of your process?
Yeah, I think things through, and it's a big leap from the state senate to the governor's office, and I had to convince myself that it was a role I could play and a job that I could do. And walking around Cedar Crest, which is the governor's home, you know, allowed me to put myself in that place and sort of visualize it. And, you know, I finally came to the conclusion that, yeah, I could do this, and I have to do this.
Kelly can now picture herself living at Cedar Crest, the governor's mansion, but standing in her way is Kris Kobach, the conservative Republican who says that Kelly is far too liberal for a Kansas that has for decades been moving steadily to the right.
Do you think Laura Kelly is a worthy opponent?
Yeah, she's absolutely a worthy opponent. She articulates a fairly extreme left point of view in Kansas, anyway, especially for Kansas. But she does it well. You know, I think she's misrepresenting my record when she has an ad running where she says he actually said our schools are overfunded.
When Sam Brownback slashed school funding with his tax experiment, he attacked what makes Kansas special. Kris Kobach supported Brownback's plan, and he actually says our schools are overfunded. For me, doing right.
Kobach insists he never said that, even though he did say that he would have vetoed a bill signed by Governor Jeff Collier that increases public school funding by more than $500 million.
I did not say we should be cutting funding for schools. I said that the number, the $500-plus million increase, was too much.
But, and this is key to Kelly's argument, Kobach has promised to slash spending and then cut taxes, just like Brownback did.
He will say that He never said our schools are overfunded. But the very act of returning to the Brownback tax experiment will result in serious cuts all across the board, but specifically for education, because that's where the bulk of our state funding goes.
Well, let's talk about that a second, because he does very much bristle at that charge that you've leveled at him, where you say he has said that Kansas schools were overfunded. You are doing a bit of extrapolating there, right?
Jim, I have 14 years on the Ways and Means Committee, the Budget Committee. I know the budget. I know that if you're talking about cuts to make up for the Brownback tax experiment, that you have got to be talking about cutting education. That's where so much of our state general fund money goes.
Sure, there are a fair number of voters out there who aren't all that familiar with your work and reputation in the Kansas Senate, but they watch a lot of television, and they'll probably head to the polls and look at the ballot and look for liberal Laura Kelly on the ballot, because, you know, every ad that airs against you from
the Republican... I could have written those ads, Jim.
Right, from the Republican, you know, Governors Association, etc., refers to you as, quote-unquote, liberal Laura Kelly.
Kelly opposes requiring work for welfare benefits, and she supports illegal immigrants getting taxpayer...
Liberal Laura Kelly likes to hike taxes.
She's Kelly talking about extra money for government, not you, liberal Laura Kelly.
You're a strong supporter of abortion rights. You're for Medicaid expansion. You're okay with repealing tax cuts slash raising taxes, call it what you will, to increase funding for public education. You'd like to roll back state laws that permit people to carry concealed handguns on college campuses. So in the context of Kansas politics, why isn't it fair to call you a liberal?
I don't think that it is fair to put that kind of label or any kind of label on me. You know, I'm really just a sort of no-nonsense, very pragmatic problem solver. I deal with issue by issue, and I really don't have an ideological bone in my body.
Maybe not, but what she does have is keen political instincts. During her time in the state Senate, Kelly has voted for tax cuts and against them. And she did, in fact, along with almost every other member of the legislature, vote for the law Chris Kobach pushed to require proof of citizenship to register and photo ID to vote. She now says that was a mistake. Finally, she voted to keep guns out of schools and hospitals, but also supported a bill that allows Kansans to carry concealed weapons without a permit.
In terms of the constitutional carry bill that was passed, I actually did vote for that. Not long after that, though, I realized that that had gone way too far. And we will craft a gun sense policy for the state of Kansas, and I will use the governor's office.
During the primary campaign this year, Josh Swaty called Kelly on the carpet for hedging on gun control.
We lost common sense with Kansas gun laws when constitutional carry passed. We should have stopped this when we had the chance at 2015, and we needed Democrats that knew that then and knew enough to stand up and say no.
Well, Kelly's have-it-both-ways position on guns gave her a bit of trouble during the primaries, but in the general election, her middle-of-the-roadness could be part of a winning formula. Just ask Kelly's friend and supporter, Kathleen Sebelius.
I am a pro-choice, progressive Democrat. I got elected 4 times statewide, and I had very clear voting records. I had very clear positions on issues. So there were a lot of Kansas voters who might not have agreed with each one of my positions, but they were willing to cross a party line or cross even a philosophical line or ignore a position or two because they liked the bulk of the work that I did.
In her initial run for governor, Sebelius faced former Kansas House Speaker Tim Schallenberger, the first social conservative to win the GOP nomination. And she got plenty of crossover support from Kansas voters who were worried less about same-sex marriage or even abortion than they were about jobs, the economy, and especially schools.
It's the issue that in 2002 was the biggest dividing line between Tim Schallenberger and me. I said, we will fund schools. I will not cut school funding. In fact, we need to increase it. Tim Schallenberger said at one famous point, I would entertain cuts in schools. Mm-hmm. We knew at the point that that sentence came out of his mouth that that could be the end of the race because there were enough Kansas voters, Republicans, independents, and Democrats who felt that school funding was their absolute number one issue.
Particularly Republicans in Johnson County.
You bet. Right. But Republicans elsewhere.
Right.
If you ask them what you want state government to do, that was number one.
In 2018, Laura Kelly is banking on funding for public schools, once again being a top issue. And because Democrats are still outnumbered by both Republican and unaffiliated voters in Kansas, Kelly has to have crossover support, and a lot of it, to win what amounts to a three-way race with Republican Chris Kobach and Independent Greg Orman, who, despite his low poll numbers, has rejected calls to stop campaigning. Some big-name Republicans are doing what they can to help deliver those crossover votes.
I have been a Republican my entire life and inherited that from my father and my mother. Laura Kelly is the only Democrat I have ever endorsed for public office.
Former Governor Bill Graves was the first to go public. So how do you know her?
She was running it was called the Sunflower State Games back in the mid-80s, which was essentially sort of a state Olympic competition type thing. And I was coming into office as the Secretary of State. Through her work with Parks and Recreation, she and I got acquainted. And I was able, over many, many years, to see her off and on, you know, living and working there in Topeka, and believe I have a pretty good grasp of the type of person she is. And you know, having been governor for 8 years and knowing what the job entails and the skill set that I think is required, she just undoubtedly, to me, is the individual that we ought to put in that position.
So you're sending a signal, I think, to other moderate Republicans searching for a place to go in this election who may be kind of wrestling with the Kelly-Orman question, and you're pointing them toward Kelly. Do you think they'll heed that?
Well, I certainly hope it encourages people to stop and think about what they're planning to do with something that seems more and more precious every day, and that's their vote. Election outcomes, as we're seeing firsthand, both at the national and at the state level, election outcomes matter. They matter in terms of the public policies that get enacted. They matter in terms of how public policies are administered. I mean, this really matters. Everyone ought to move past this tribal party notion and say to themselves, as an individual, as a working mother or father, as a college student, as a retiree, whatever your station in life, what sort of individual should I be looking for to lead this state? I happen to believe Laura's an excellent choice, and to the extent people, you know, find some guidance in my recommendation, that'd be great.
Kelly says she's honored to have Graves' endorsement, along with those of former Governor Mike Hayden and former Republican Senators Nancy Landon Kassebaum and Sheila Fromm, who are encouraging fellow moderates to vote for the Democrat in this governor's race.
We had a lot of those moderates already supporting me before, but for those who weren't paying as close attention, I think it did send a very, very loud message.
As a voter, do you vote the party line?
You know, of course, ballots are supposed to be secret, so I shouldn't tell you, but no, I vote for the person. You know, I grew up in a Republican family, Jim, and I was actually registered as an independent for a large part of my adult life, and didn't become a Democrat really until the early 90s. I don't have a built-in party preference. I really am going to look for the person who will represent the values and issues that are important to me. I think that's, you know, evidenced by the relationships that I have and the endorsements that I've gotten, is that I'm not seen as terribly partisan.
Well, my fellow Kansans, now it's your turn to decide. Your turn to add to the history we've been exploring for the past several weeks.
We always vote, and I just feel like you can't complain about what's going on if you don't vote.
I really don't see myself voting for anybody who doesn't support gun rights and who is, you know, for abortion.
Expanding Medicaid, I think that that's important because we're seeing small rural hospitals close.
A lot of the businesses here depend on immigrants.
Immigration, what's going on at the border right now with all the people coming in from Central America, it's concerning me.
Education's huge. Basically just gutting it in Kansas, which is terrible. It's the same thing that's happening down in Oklahoma.
Y'all registered to vote?
All right.
You're registered to vote, I'm sure, right?
That's important.
If we don't do it, look who we're going to get for governor. Good Lord, this whole state's going to turn upside down if Kobach gets him.
I think he's like a Trump man. He's strong. He's courageous. He will do what he says he's going to do. He's brilliant.
Would you like a yard sign?
But I do think Mr. Orman is very probably going to get my check mark.
Don't take my guns, touch my guns.
I go right with the right to life ballot.
I'm more moderate on abortion issues. I'm more moderate on women's rights issues.
Well, obviously the state budget has been quite a disaster.
The political side of it, they've just forgotten about the farmer over the years.
I just don't understand where we're going. You know, I just see that we're going down the wrong path.
The governors actually have a lot to say in how the nation goes, comparatively to sometimes senators.
I figure my vote could be the one.
The results of this year's election and its consequences, that's next time on My Fellow Kansans.
My Fellow Kansans is a production of the Kansas News Service, a collaboration of public radio stations in Kansas. The podcast is written and reported by Jim McLean, edited by Amy Jeffries, and mixed by Matthew Long Middleton. The production team includes Beth Golay, Nadia Foe, Scott Cannon, and me, Grace Lotz. Primary Color Music composed our theme. Jordan Kirtley designed our logo. Several Kansas News Service reporters, Stephen Bisaha, Madeline Fox, Nomin Ujiadin, and Celia Yopis Jepsen, contributed a little something to this episode. Special thanks to Neil Carruth of NPR and the NPR training team. If you liked this episode, leave us a review. It only takes a minute, and it helps other people discover our podcast. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at KS News Service.
You've been listening to My Fellow Kansans on KPR Presents. Find out who will serve as the next governor of Kansas and who's heading to Washington to represent Kansas in Congress. Kansas Public Radio brings you live election coverage Tuesday night beginning at 7 p.m. KPR News Director Jay Schaefer and Jim McLean of the Kansas News Service will co-anchor our election night coverage and bring you the latest results from around the state. Join us for live election coverage from NPR and KPR, Tuesday night beginning at 7 on Kansas Public Radio. I'm Kay McIntyre. KPR Presents is a production of Kansas Public Radio at the University of Kansas.